service.
Hey, I'm Jake Brennan, and I want to tell you about Disgraceland, the award-winning music and true crime podcast that I host. Disgraceland tells the stories of musicians getting away with murder and behaving very badly. Fleetwood Mac, Nipsey Hussle, Cardi B, Ozzy Osbourne, Taylor Swift, Tupac, The Beatles, Amy Winehouse, Jay-Z, The Grateful Dead, and so many more. This is not the music history you've heard before. This is an uncensored, immersive look at the lives of musical icons as seen through the crimes they've committed or that have been perpetrated against them. Did Jerry Lee Lewis murder his fifth wife? What really happened to Sam Cooke in that seedy motel at 3 a.m.? And how did the Rolling Stones wind up sleeping with the First Lady? Wait, what? New episodes of Disgraceland drop every Tuesday with bonus episodes released on Mondays and Thursdays. So get in, buckle up, and join me in Disgraceland. Available right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Rock and roll. Badlands listeners, are you here? Are you with me? Are you too tired to go to bed? Too riled up to stay home? I know I am. This is another podcast that comes after the podcast. Welcome to Badlands, the rap party. Welcome to the Badlands bonus episode, another thing we like to call the rap party. And just like that other show, this is a show that comes after the show, a voyage from one episode of Badlands to the other, the backlot breakdown of sorts. On this episode, we're talking about James Dean, SNL, M. Night Signs, and just like that other show, we are digging into your movie-focused voicemails, texts, DMs, and more. So, Badlands listeners, let's get into it. James Dean. Is there a more iconic actor than James Dean? The subject of our latest episode of Badlands. The word iconic, it's casually thrown around these days. It's used to describe everything from celebrity fashion to social media influencers, to which I say, boo. Iconic. The word is reserved for the greatest of the great, the most memorable, the mold breakers, the earth shakers. Iconic. This word is for effortless pompadours and leather jackets and Porsche Spyders. Iconic is not for ad agency keyboard jockeys. Iconic is for James Dean. James Dean died on September 30th, 1955. He was 25 years old, and on the day he died, an icon was born. His death came just after the release of his first film, East of Eden, and just before the release of his second film, Rebel Without a Cause. Kids, this new kind of kid, the quote-unquote teenager, flocked to the movie theaters in groups across the country to see this breathtakingly compelling new actor, James Dean. He was the picture of cool before mainstream America really even had a name for it. James Dean's death fueled moviegoers, and it fueled ticket sales. The studio raked in the cash. But how would they keep the Jimmy Dean gravy train running? After all, James Dean was dead. What could possibly compel fickle teenagers to come back to the theater again after their star's death to see his third movie, Giant? The studio got an idea. What if James Dean wasn't dead? Yeah, what if he was actually alive? What would that do to the public's imagination? Why, it would most certainly drive them back into the theater to see James Dean in Giant and to mine his latest appearance for clues to his rumored survival, wouldn't it? Of course it would. So, the studio issued a statement. Quote, "The studio vehemently denies any rumor that James Dean is alive." Even though there was no such rumor that James Dean was alive. And then with the help of a high-powered PR agent, the studio helped create the very rumor that they were denying. And guilt-stricken fans became obsessive fans. They wrote letters to James Dean. They told him that they knew he was still alive. These cheesy illusionists, carny barkers, claimed that they could summon James Dean from the dead. And alas, the legend of James Dean was off and running fast like a late model Porsche across the California desert. And that Porsche, the Porsche Spyder, Porsche Spyder, that James Dean did in fact actually die in, it became the stuff of legend as well. His car was rumored to be haunted. After James Dean's death, two racers, they went and they went to whatever the car graveyard, the junkyard, whatever it was, however they did it. I'm not exactly sure anymore. I don't remember. We recorded this episode a long time ago, but two guys who were into cars, they took some of the parts off of James Dean's wrecked car and put them onto their cars, and both of them crashed during their races, and one of them was killed and the other was seriously injured. Okay. Another time they were transporting James Dean's Porsche. It slipped off the trailer and it broke the mechanic's leg. Another time it was parked in a garage. That garage burned down, and though the car remained unharmed. Okay. Later in the life of this car that just would not be put to bed, they toured the car around. They were California Highway Patrol, got their hands on it. They were using it for a driver's ed event. And there was a student at this assembly, and the car got shifted and it moved and it fell on the student and it broke the student's hip. The James Dean death car, as I say in the latest episode of Badlands on James Dean, it was an attraction unto itself. Come see the car James Dean died in, and come listen to the latest episode of Disgraceland, where we get into all of this and more. The myth of James Dean, the legend, the curse of his car. James Dean died with just two movies out, which got me thinking, what are some of the best sophomore efforts of some of our greatest actors? In other words, if this actor died after making only two movies, would they be as big of a legend as James Dean? Okay, Marlon Brando, his second movie, A Streetcar Named Desire. Al Pacino, his second movie, The Panic in Needle Park. Meryl Streep, her second movie, The Deer Hunter. Sean Penn, his second movie, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I don't know about you guys, I think I'm riding for Fast Times. James Dean, right? Filmed three movies, died after the second one. The third one was then released. Okay. James Dean died in a brutal car crash. That also got me thinking, what other famous actors died in car crashes? Grace Kelly, 1982 in Monaco. I didn't know this. I had no idea about this. I've been to Monaco. I can easily see how Grace Kelly could die on a street in Monaco. Paul Walker, of course, I knew about this. 2013, Valencia. He's of the Fast and Furious franchise. So that's a little weird. And then most famously, probably Jane Mansfield, subject of Badlands episode, of course. 1967, she died in Louisiana. Decapitated, really fucked up story. And of course, the myth of James Dean's car being cursed, it got me thinking about what other Hollywood curses are there out there, okay? This James Dean thing is the gift that keeps on giving, okay? There's the Poltergeist curse, which we covered in Badlands. There's the Twilight Zone, the 1983 film, not the TV show, but the 1983 film, The Twilight Zone. Not a great film, I don't think. Some people love it, I don't. But three people died while they were making it, so there was a rumor going around that the shooting of that movie was cursed as well. And The Exorcist was thought to be cursed for good reason. The set burnt down. There were on-set injuries for two of the actresses, deaths of two actors immediately upon wrapping production. 617-906-6638. That's the number. Call me, text me, leave me a voicemail, send me a text. What movie / Hollywood myths, legends, and curses keep you up at night? What do you want to hear me dive into in a proper episode of Badlands? Let me know. Think about it. Ponder it for a minute. 617-906-6638. Bang me up on the voicemail, on the text. Let me know. I'll be back right after this. All right, we are back. The number one album on the day James Dean died on September 30th, 1955 was Love Me or Leave Me by Doris Day, soundtrack to the film of the same name starring Doris Day. And it was the best-selling album of her career, an album that I never heard of. I'm guessing none of you heard it as well. Maybe some of you have. If you have, let me know. Is it good? Should I pay attention to it? I don't know. I kind of love Doris Day as an actor. Not love is too strong of a word. I like that movie, Julie. Other than that, I don't know. The most I know about Doris Day, previous to my generation, of course, I know she was a mega star. For me, though, famously, the mother of Terry Melcher caused Terry Melcher to pass, so the story goes, on Charles Manson as a musical artist worth getting behind and producing. That's one version of the story. Anyways, we've covered this story. Doris Day has come up numerous times in various episodes of Badlands and Disgraceland, where we've touched upon the Charles Manson saga. Yeah, so that was the number one album. The number one song at the time was The Yellow Rose of Texas by Mitch Miller, later covered by Elvis Presley and Willie Nelson. It was 5 weeks at number one, preceded by Bill Haley's Rock Around the Clock, which spent 8 weeks at the top. And all I got to say about this is, holy crap, 1955 was lame for mainstream music. This is obviously pre the rock and roll takeover of the charts, of course. Mitch Miller, you know, I'm not going to talk smack. It's not worth it. But just, you know, a weird time. America in transition in the 50s, starting to bend toward the 60s, and rock and roll culture is about to take over the charts. But as you can see here, on the day that James Dean died, it had not yet already. We did this thing. We've done this thing a couple times now on these rap party episodes, and I'm calling the music mashup section of the rap party, where we talk about some musical connection to the Badlands subject that we recently discussed in our full episode. So with James Dean, not a lot of musical connections. I didn't look too deep. I'm sure there's some there. As memory serves, he was a jazz guy. I could have gone to talk about Chet Baker, but I didn't, because I want to be self-serving here for a minute and talk about James Dean and his relation to serial killer Charlie Starkweather, of which there was, of course, no relationship when James Dean died. Starkweather was still in his mid-teens by that point. However, 3 years later in 1958, when Charlie Starkweather goes on his killing spree, his picture starts to be in the newspaper and the television starts to salivate over his image, providing us with the first sort of connection between pop culture and serial killer culture, even though we didn't call it that at the time. It was James Dean. That was the conduit. Even though James Dean was dead, Starkweather had a passing resemblance to the matinee idol. He had the pompadour. He had the popped collar. He had the denim jacket. He had the young teenage good looks. And he had that rebel without a cause vibe. And the man was on a murderous killing spree. Now, I know all this because I've known it for years, but most significantly in the last week, we covered Starkweather in our Disgraceland episode on Bruce Springsteen. Starkweather was the inspiration for the song Nebraska, which became the title track for Bruce Springsteen's greatest album, Nebraska. If you haven't heard this episode yet, you can go do so in the Disgraceland feed. One thing I talk about, though, is this very subject, the relationship between Starkweather's image and James Dean. And upon closer inspection, that is the established narrative, but it appears once again, ladies and gentlemen, the established narrative is, of course, blown out of proportion and not entirely historically accurate. You know, when you really look at Starkweather, this was made obvious to me in reading Warren Zanes' new book called Deliver Me From Nowhere. When you really look at Starkweather, even though they called him this sort of James Dean character, he does not have the charisma, not even close to what James Dean had. James Dean was an incredibly compelling guy, just one of those guys that the camera loves. Starkweather was not. He was a little runt who had a cool haircut for a minute, and at that minute he happened to be killing a bunch of people, and that's really where the connection stops. Starkweather knew this, of course. He milked his 15 minutes of fame before it was even an established thing, before Andy Warhol was even on the scene. Charlie Starkweather milked this James Dean thing, and he parlayed it into a little bit of celebrity that he took to the electric chair and ultimately that he died with in Lincoln, Nebraska in 1958. Other than that, I could not find a compelling music connection to James Dean. If you guys know of one, if he's showing up at Dizzy Gillespie sessions in the Village, or if he's sort of, I don't know, hanging out and partying up in Laurel Canyon with some musicians that I'm not aware of, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. I know, of course, of the Sal Mineo connection. We covered Sal in, I think, the first season of Badlands, and Sal wasn't really a musician, but he was an artist, and I'm sure connected to some musicians. I know that connection's there. I just didn't have the time to research it, so I went with this self-serving Starkweather thing. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope it created some awareness for the Bruce Springsteen episode that we got going on. All right, guys, you know the deal. 617-906-6638. You can leave me a voicemail about anything, really. It doesn't have to be about James Dean. Dean and the Music Connection. Doesn't have to be about James Dean at all. It can be about whatever, all right? Last week, I put the call out to you guys to stoke in this call-in line, get the conversation going here in the rap party. Last week, we covered Chris Farley, okay? Richard Pryor before that. Let's check in here with a voicemail from the 505 on the Chris Farley Chippendale skit. One of my faves, the 505, should know how good this skit is because apparently her boyfriend is an ex-Chippendale. Here you go.
Jake, I can't believe I'm calling, but I just got a call because I love the Chris Farley episode. Me and my boyfriend discussed favorite Chris Farley skits, and oh my God, everybody's working for the weekend, the Chippendales. Boyfriend was an ex-Chippendale. We dug it. It's great. Okay, got to tell you my Lauren Markham story. I'll be really fast. I used to work at a very big hotel, and lots of people would come in, and we're not allowed to talk to them. Anyways, I knew who Lauren Michaels, huge fan of Saturday Night Live. I knew who he was. Sitting at the table with a girl, didn't know his face. So, get the check, look at the name, laugh out loud. Oh, my God, Lauren Michaels, like, you know, the guy from SNL. My coworker's like, yeah, it's not Lauren Michaels. So I took his word for it. Anyways, went back to the table, dropped his check, and I said, oh, my God, your name's Lauren Michaels, just like Lauren Michaels from Saturday Night Live. He looked at the girl, and they kind of laughed, and I immediately knew it was Lauren Michaels. This was like 2006, 2007. There was no Google on my phone. But then I realized it was Lauren Michaels, and I almost died. So that's my cool Lauren Michaels story. Anyways, love, love, love the show. You are amazing. I look forward to everything you do. Rock and roll.
All right. I love that. And I love the Chippendale connection. I love the skit. Of course, it's amazing. I don't know how you don't laugh your ass off at that Chris Farley skit. And I love the Lauren Michaels story as well. Thank you for sharing. Okay. We're going to go to this voicemail from the 714.
Jake from Disgraceland. You are killing it weekly, brother. You are slowly becoming one of my favorite Jakes ever. You have definitely surpassed Jake from State Farm. The upper echelon is always going to be Jake Snake Roberts from Stone Mountain, Georgia. But, brother, you are running close second right now. Brother, if you have not caught Mayor of Kingstown on Paramount Plus, if you like gritty and grimy, that is a series you need to catch. Jeremy Renner, who was not even on my radar, is killing it. Very dark, very gritty, very grimy. And SNL, I think you would appreciate the Colin Jost and Michael Che section. It is very definitely a throwback to the old. We are going to be right there on the cusp of things that are acceptable and not, but hilarious still. Very Blazing Saddles-esque. Richard Pryor would love it. Catch that part of SNL, if nothing else, during their news portion. And just keep killing, brother. Keep bringing the content. I think some Patreon and some merch is in my future. Peace out. Bye.
All right, I dig the love for the new SNL. We need Saturday Night Live to be great. Again, thank you for calling, man. No Patreon, but we are working on something similar for you listeners out there who are super fans, where you can get more content. I'll have more to report on this shortly. Let's keep going with these voicemails. Let's check out a voicemail from Ryan in the 612, who also wanted to chime in about Saturday Night Live.
Hey, Jake. This is Ryan. I'm calling in about the SNL, the favorite SNL era. My favorite SNL era, I think has got to be Fred Armisen, Bill Hader, Kristen Wiig, all those folks not too long ago. And I'm also a big believer that SNL is not, they're still going strong. Yes, today they're still going strong. They might, yeah, like, minus like the political jokes, right? Because they can't, there is that strong feeling like they can't step too far outside the neo-lib line these days. But minus the political jokes, there's still some good sketches on there. Tim Robinson, best SNL writer of all time, best comedian of all time. Okay, thanks for making your shows. See ya.
Ryan, totally agree about the Bill Hader, Kristen Wiig cast. I'm not going to go there with the politics. It's it ain't my bag, man. Let's check out one more voicemail here. Appreciate you guys stoking this rap party calling, by the way. Let's go to the 919.
Hey, you asked for top three science fiction. I just got one for you, and it's Blade Runner, the director's cut. Rutger Hauer in that film is everything. Bye.
Yes, Blade Runner might be the best. Might be the best sci-fi. Certainly one of my favorites. I go Alien, Blade Runner, and Signs. My goodness, how good is Signs? Amazing movie. More on that later in this episode. But let's just another reminder here, 617-906-6638. You can leave me a voicemail, but you can also leave me some text. Text me. I try to answer as much as I can. I try to answer as much as I can in these episodes. Let's go to some text now. This one from the 716. Hey, Jake, just listened to last week's rap party. Was disappointed that you didn't let us know if you watched Videodrome. Nicole in Buffalo. Nicole, I have not. I apologize. I have not had the time. And frankly, I forgot, if I'm being totally honest. And I got sucked into Signs and I got sucked into a whole sports thing I'm caught up in. But I will check it out. I'm not sure if I'll be able to check it out before the next rap party, because I am traveling, but I will do my best and I will do it soon. Okay. I promise you. And I'll come back with a full on review just for you, Nicole in Buffalo. All right. Another text here from the 978. Oh yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm just going to read this. Hey Jake, super quick sci-fi movie recommendation. Moon with Sam Rockwell. Disgraceland tie-in would be, it's directed by Duncan Jones, David Bowie's son. You know, this is one of those movies when it came out, I was like, I can't wait for this fucking movie. And then I never watched it and I completely forgot about it. And I love Sam Rockwell and I'm stoked to get into this. So thank you for the recommendation. Moon with Sam Rockwell. If anyone else has heard this, let me know. 617-906-6638. If you've seen Moon, directed by Bowie's son, Duncan, with the mega awesome Sam Rockwell. Great actor. Looking forward to checking that out. Not before Videodrome, however. Nicole, I haven't forgotten about you. Not yet. Okay, let's do another text here. Hey, Jake, this is Melissa Conti. This is from the 203. I love all of your shows. Thank you for releasing all the episodes. My three sci-fi recommendations are Aliens. Not Alien, Aliens. Firestarter and Lilo. Firestarter. Isn't that a Stephen King book? Drew Barrymore in that, I think. And Lilo and Stitch. I've attached a pic of my alien tattoo. I've been obsessed with the movie for years. I would love to hear an episode on model actress Jamie King and her late boyfriend Davide Sorrente. Thanks again and take care. Oh, wow, this tattoo is amazing, actually. Her alien tattoo. I don't know the story about Jamie King. I don't. Is that who, like, early 2000s Jamie King, blonde? Is that who we're talking about here? All right. 248 writes in, I will reveal my age when I say that Jackie Gleason had the best comedy show. Yes, you will. But hey, I'm not an ageist. Maybe Jackie Gleason did have the best comedy show. What do I know? 719 writes in, Brighton from the 719, although I live in the 970, huh? Sci-fi, punk, ridiculous humor, 80s cheese, Harry Dean Stanton and Emilio. How are you feeling about Repo Man? I have not seen Repo Man since, I don't know, I was a little kid. I know I need to go watch it again. Thank you for the reminder. 385 writes in, favorite Farley sketch, you cannot go wrong with Matt Foley. I would agree. That's a good one, but I don't know if it's my favorite. It might be. It might be. More Farley stuff from the 714. Best Farley skit, easily. We got another one here for Chippendale Dancer with the late, great Patrick Swayze. There you go. I'm with you on that. By the way, on Patrick Swayze, I have a friend who thinks that Roadhouse is the best movie of all time, which it isn't. But I love that he thinks that. All right, one more text from the 540. Going back to Pryor, the Richard Pryor episode of Badlands. This texter says, Pryor movies stir crazy, Silver Streak, he and Gene Wilder kill. Also, Which Way Up, Greased Lightning. I need to see Greased Lightning. That's right. And Bustin' Loose with Cicely Tyson. Those are great recommendations. Thank you, 540. I'm going to check those out. Let's do some DMs, shall we? From Missy Kenner Swain. She says, I loved seeing you on Resolved on Vice TV. Awesome job, Jake. And yeah, just so you know, this is how I heard about me being on this new series on Vice TV. Of course, I knew I was going to be on it. I filmed the damn thing, but never heard anything from the producer until today. Still haven't heard from the producer, but I did get this message from listener Missy Kenner-Swain, who saw this TV show. It's a new show on Vice called Resolved. And the episode I did was on Heath Ledger. And they called me to guest on that episode and to do commentary because they heard the Badlands episode on Heath Ledger. And we talk about Heath Ledger's death. So you can cop that Vice TV episode on, I guess, on demand. I watched it this morning. That's how I checked it out. You can check it out as well. Let's do some more responses here. All right. At David Happening writes, hey, probably more of a Badlands suggestion, but with a Disgraceland crossover. Ever thought of diving into skateboarder Mark Gator Rogowski? He's one of the skaters on recent Disgraceland Tom Petty's music video for Free Falling. That story's pretty dark, and yeah, that's a really great idea. Maybe we'll get into that. Let's see. This is from at Chris Kaleri on Instagram. What is up? I'm a listener from season one and love everything you do. I'm a big fan of the 27 Club and Badlands as well. All the mentions of the Lost Boys and no mention of an episode on the Corys. That's a good one, man. Corey Feldman and Corey Haim. That would be cool. Perhaps. I like that angle. What else we got? Huh. I'm just opening my my Instagram DM message, and Mr. Roger Avery just hearted one of my DMs. Hasn't responded to that video I did in tribute to him. But one day, man, a guy can dream. All right, guys, you know how to get in touch with me, 617-906-6638. Hit me with your questions, your comments, anything on the most recent episode of Badlands or any episode of Badlands, really, 617-906-6638 or at Disgraceland Pod on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. I'll take a quick break. Back after this. This is the Other Recommendations part, the part of the other show where we recommend the movies and television content. The Recommendations part, the part where you send me all your weird and awesome movie recommendations and we discuss the movie recommendations part here in the Badlands Rap Party bonus episode. Okay, let's start with James Dean content. Woo! It is hot in this booth right now. Hot like James Dean. I'm going to be straight with you. I can recognize the brilliance of James Dean as an actor and understand why he had such an intense impact in his day, but I'm not going to pretend that I connect to or relate to his films in any meaningful way. I just don't. I'm too young. I'm too far removed or something. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't have to do with age, because the early Brando stuff, I do connect with. But Rebel, Giant, East of Eden, I've seen them. I can't say they've hooked me. There have been too many different and more relatable to me anyway versions of what James Dean did. And to take nothing away from him, I get why he is so recognized for his talent. I get why he's iconic. I get the whole thing. I've tried, just ain't my bag. I can appreciate his films, but they do not compel me. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you how great East of Eden or Rebel Without a Cause is. But what I am going to do instead is talk about some James Dean related content, specifically the Sopranos episode called Big Girls Don't Cry from February 2000, where Christopher Moltisanti depicts James Dean's Rebel Without a Cause character in his improv class. It is incredible and totally surprising for the character and a grand salami of a performance from Michael Imperioli. If you have not seen this episode, you need to. If you have, it's worth a rewatch. I'm just reminding you. It's there for you. Go get it, okay? You can't go wrong. All right, what else have I been watching? Watching a lot of baseball, basketball, hockey, NASCAR. Recently watched, not sports, but I recently watched Signs from M. Night Shyamalan. Sci-fi masterpiece. Okay, I can't for the life of me understand why this movie is not talked about more and why I'm getting to it so goddamn late. In fact, if it wasn't for you guys recommending it, I probably never would have seen it. It is so fucking good, okay? Rotten Tomatoes gives this movie a 75% rating, which is what? A C? What is that? A C? That's some bullshit is what that is. Roger Ebert, I looked it up. He gave it 4 stars. Now we're talking, though I would have thrown in a fifth. But to prove that critics don't know shit, the New York Times said about Signs, actually, Never mind. I'm not going to dignify the stupidity of the New York Times review by reading it in here. Just know that it's pretentious, self-serving, smug, and dumb. Science cost, the budget, $72 million, cost $72 million to make, and it did $402 million at the box office. At the box office, who knows how much it's done since then in streaming or DVD or whatever, however else they make money for films long-term, okay? So as far as I'm concerned, the people spoke with their pockets. Fuck the critics. Fuck Rotten Tomatoes. Signs is great. Most of you probably already know this, though, because you're smarter than I am, and I'm just getting to it now. But for those who have not seen it, go ahead, check it out. Signs, you will not be disappointed. 617-906-6638 for your movie recommendations. Television as well. I got to go back. I got to watch the latest season of Barry. I got to finish that. I'm deep, like most of you guys are, I'm deep into Succession. I watch it on Sunday nights, and then I rewatch it on Mondays. It's so fucking good. Every episode this season, I come back, I say the same thing. It's the best episode ever. They're destroying out there. All right? You can hit me up. You know where to hit me up. Let me know what you're watching. Give me some sci-fi movie recs. I'm going to get through Videodrome, right? That was the one I need to watch. And I need to see Aliens 2. A lot of sci-fi holes in my game that I need to fill for you guys. Get at me with your recommendations at Disgraceland Pod, 617-906-6638. I will have more for you next week. But before that, I'm going to take a quick break. I'll be back in a quick few seconds. All right, let's recap, shall we? Number one, James Dean is available now in Badlands, if you did not already know. Number two, next week in Badlands, Paris Hilton in The Bling Ring. Number three, Do Not Sleep on the Bruce Springsteen Nebraska episode, available in the Disgrace Land feed. Number four, Call Me for Fuck's Sake. Give me a call, man. 617-906-6638. If you're not the talking type, you just want to type. You don't want to talk. You want to type with your thumbs. You don't want to talk with your tongue. You can text me. 617-906-6638. We've got this Badlands movie conversation going, chugging, all right? Thank you for your listenership. I appreciate you. Badlands is cruising. I can see the numbers. You guys are watching. I love you for it. Keep it up, all right? I got to stop talking. My voice, I got to give it some rest. It's hot as a motherfucker in this booth. I'm going to go split, but for right now, a second dose of bliss for yours truly, in honor of Merrill, his Louisville slugger, and willingness to swing away. Me reading the script to you from Signs. Fade in. Interior. Window. Morning. We're looking out a second-story window of a house. The backyard is large and green with a wooden jungle gym, worn from use. A single tree throws shade onto a barbecue and a picnic table. The backyard is lined by crops. Corn. Golden and brown. 6 feet high. Everything is perfect, like a postcard. And then we hear a child scream. It's far away. We don't know where it's coming from. Cut to interior, bedroom, morning. Graham Hess wakes up from his sleep. He thought he heard something. He listens. He hears the heater, the refrigerator downstairs humming, the occasional birds outside chirping. Graham climbs out of bed. He moves in his pajama pants and white Barron's minor league baseball t-shirt towards the bedroom door. Cut to interior hall landing, morning. Graham stands in the hall landing where three bedroom doors meet. He moves to the door that has his children's drawings taped to it. He puts his ear close, listens. He relaxes. Graham leans down and picks up two balled up sweat socks and a child's sweater from the hallway.
Quit talking and start mixing.
Cut it!